Fantasy freaks and geeks, what's up? And you got to be a fantasy freak or geek to be listening to us right now, and I appreciate it. I love it. James Go here. You're listening to the NFL Fantasy Live podcast. We got the magical beard of fantasy. Matt Franciscovich, what's up?
I'm here.
You're here. You're
again.
Living.
I'm living.
Living day to day.
That's right. Okay. Day to day. Don't know where my next meal's coming from, but I'm here.
Oh, boy. The Whiz Kid from Wisconsin. Alex Kelhar, what's cracking?
Not too much. Got to the theater last night, which is always good.
Okay.
Saw some office Christmas party.
All right.
Fun. Cheap night at the theater. I'm a big fan of that.
You getting hyphy for this Green Bay New York game?
I'm trying to not dwell on it too much. You know, it's not even close to the weekend yet, so I don't want to start my emotional tilt, but be in full force on Sunday. My father and my sister are going to the game. They texted
what?
Me. Supposed to be in single.
Dude, that's yep. Nice.
No way.
He swung his way into two tickets, and the two of them are going to go.
Oh, that's dope.
I know. Yeah. I'm super jealous.
Okay. MG, my guy, Marcus Grant, what's up?
Did you hear? USC run the Rose Bowl.
My timeline was just cheating. So annoying.
I'm sure it was for you.
It was the most annoying.
I'm sure it was annoying
for
you.
I'm like, okay, all right. Epic meltdown, no question, by Penn State. One of the worst. I mean, is it the worst? It's the worst. Come on, dude. You're up 21 points and just completely.
Not 20. It was only like 15 at one point.
It didn't get to 21.
It was 42-27 in the third quarter.
I don't know that it was a meltdown because it was a back-and-forth game the
whole
game.
No. It was. But the last 2 minutes of that game, epic meltdown.
Okay, so you know if you're Trace McSorley, and you know maybe you throw one up deep and it gets knocked down. So hey, why not try the same thing the very next play and have it picked off? I mean,
the pass that got knocked down too, that was a crazy pass because it could have either been a touchdown or a pick six, but it got knocked down.
Yes,
it was a great game.
But it was a great game.
Fantastic game.
Got to be there in person with my paw, so it was great.
Really?
I was there.
Man, you guys
did Brian go with you too, or was he back?
No. My friend Brian and I, we saw a far less exciting game on Sunday.
Cool name drop.
We were at, name dropping my friend who lives in Chandler, Arizona. The day before we were at Cardinals Rams, which was far less exciting.
Cardinals Rams? Oh, really? Wasn't the marquee matchup?
No, not so much. Okay. Not so much.
All right, West Virginia.
That's pretty sick.
Matt Harmon, what's up?
Is my mic even on?
Yeah, your mic is on now.
Oh, it's finally on.
Yeah, I can hear myself. Interesting. I was muted before the show even started.
Oh my!
Well, I
God.
Caught it in one of the recent episodes. I know astute listeners might have heard it. Right when the music was starting one time, there was like a bump of a mic. And I was
sure.
Like, what was that?
What is that?
And then
of course,
we'd been done recording, and I saw it on the editing thing. I was like, oh, Harmon was taking this thing up to get a drink. So then
of
I was
course.
Listening this time. It happened again. We had to restart the whole podcast.
Wow.
Water intake is important, people.
Shocking.
You should be if you need help on how to calculate how much water you should be drinking – you could Google it, or you could at me.
Shocking. Matt Harmon's needs come before everyone else's.
Right?
What do you mean my needs?
Shocking.
You could have had a sip of water while you were here roasting James Coe before we started the show.
Well, listen.
That's why I needed
a drink.
Your throat was parched after so much.
Yeah.
We'll see how much of that I clip off and put at the end, but
oh
James Coe got subject to like a 15-minute roasting by Franchise and Harmon.
All because came in today with a buttoned shirt that was actually tucked into
and
my
a
pants.
Cupcake that your wife made you.
Yeah.
And a lemon cupcake.
And
my
shoes
lovely wife.
And that Two. Bag.
Oh, my God.
And the watch. I mean, the watch is what just reeks of money.
Oh, my God.
Coming in here with your basketball money, waving it in our face.
What? Waving it in your face?
Check it out. Edit this.
Oh,
I'm pretty
my
sure
God.
You said that.
That's
pretty sure.
That's not
Wow, this
accurate.
Podcast is off the rails, and we're like 2 minutes
Oh,
in.
My gosh. Listen, we got a big-time show in front of us today, as we always do. We're going to explain playoff challenge. If you can't get enough fantasy in your life, and how could you get enough fantasy in your life? We got an additional game here in fantasy called playoff challenge. We're going to explain it. It's a pretty fun game. Low stakes, obviously, so just go play. It's fun. Lessons learned. We're going to talk about some lessons that we learned during the 2016 fantasy season. What can we take into 2017? And if we're going to make one change to standard scoring, what would it be? I've got a little bit of a take there that I'm all fired up about. I don't know why. And plus, we kind of wrap up what we've been talking about throughout the season, right? We talk about Mark Ingram. What is he, quote, on pace for? We will tell you what he finished with on the season. Talking about what his prospects are, the laying ahead for 2017. We'll talk about March to 1100, a.k.a. It's Dead. Give you a Marvin Jones update, what that means for 2017. We will give you the Brandon LaFell, the super exciting, it's super marketable, Brandon LaFell, Tyler Boyd, head-to-head competition with A.J. Green out. We'll finally give you those final tallies as well. Plus, it was this kind of went under the radar, but Chris Ivory, Chris Ivory, for some particular reason, Matt Franciscovich caped up for Chris Ivory. We will give you the details.
Caped up.
Of that debate between the French and the Harmon. And plus, we'll give you a best of moment here for the podcast. Best of the worst singing. And we shall vote on that prestigious podcast award. But as always, we start the show with your top headlines.
The camera highlights in the world of sports.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Whistles go woo!
I like turtles.
We continue to follow breaking news.
Watch the news because I'm a kid.
So y'all need to have your kids, have your wife.
These headlines really kind of, I guess, play into playoff challenge, and we'll explain that in just a bit. But Connor Cook is going to start for the Raiders. He's got that super exciting match. It's going to be Connor Cook, Brock Osweiler.
Ooh. Oh, boy.
Giddy Get up. Fired up.
Must. It's going to be a heck of a playoff game.
Remember for the – I mean, it's – I feel bad for Raider Nation a little bit.
Yeah, totally.
I mean, they're coasting along, right? They're going. They look great. And then their star quarterback goes down with a broken leg, Derek Carr. And then their backup comes in, preseason hero Matt McGloin, who has, like, unbelievable preseason numbers. Something – I mean, his quarterback rating in the preseason is, like, 110 or over 110 or something ridiculous. Anyways, he comes in. He plays a good game and a half before getting drilled. And then now he's out. Now they got their third-string quarterback, Connor Cook, a rookie quarterback out of Michigan State. He's going to start for the Raiders against the Texans. The fourth-round rookie in Connor Cook will join Minnesota's Joe Webb and Denver's Gus Frat as the only quarterbacks this century to start their first game of the season in the playoffs.
I mean, admittedly, the century is only 17 years old.
Okay.
16 plus.
16 plus. All right.
Nice well, actually, there.
First, it'll be his first career start.
It's his first career start. Yep. It's going to be in the playoffs.
Yeah.
I guess what does it mean for, you know, the Raiders? The Texans obviously are going to get after it, and we will talk about this extensively in Playoff Challenge, but are there any Raiders you trust in that game?
No.
No.
No, no, no.
Definitely
no.
Not.
No, because I think if the Texans are smart, and defensively they're a very, very good team, they're going to load the box. And, you know, they're going to stop the running game. They're going to stop Latavius Murray and Jalen Richard and DeAndre Washington, and they are going to dare Connor Cook to beat them. And I think you go in with that, and if Connor Cook beats you, you tip your hat, and you're like, hey, good on you.
What is the final score of this game going to be? 3-2?
Probably 16-9. No, 16-8. One team's going to get two field goals and have a safety.
Oh, my God.
I think it'll be a touchdown and they go for two.
This feels like the sort of game where, you know, you catch it on the radio, you catch a little bit at the beginning,
yep.
you go run some errands, you have it on the radio, and maybe you come back
at
the end.
Man, I'm still going
to
watch it.
I'm just going to say, I will be watching this entire game because
it's fascinating.
For a few reasons.
That's one word.
Okay.
One, I mean, it's playoff football, even if it's some bad quarterback play.
That's true.
Like,
that's true.
There are still other players on the field, and they'll be hyped up for it.
Khalil Mack.
Right.
That's true.
Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah.
I mean,
Will Fork in potentially his last game.
Okay.
Not to mention,
and
I am definitely an advocate of bad football when it becomes funny. And I think that this could, with these quarterbacks, we could veer into that territory. Like, I still think, for whatever reason, one of the most fun games I had watching this year was the week one game between the Rams and the 49ers, because especially a playoff game, everybody will be watching it.
Oh, man.
Get in on Twitter and you make some jokes. You like, man, I hope I get some retweets on this.
I thought you were going to mention the Arizona-Seattle game was it Seattle-Carolina?
The Jake Delhomme 5-pick game?
No, this was this season.
It was Arizona-Seattle, all the missed field goals.
There you go.
Yeah, but
that was not fun.
Yeah, that game got annoying because it turned into a debate of this isn't a good game. Well, it is a good game. You're not woke enough for
the defensive.
So yeah, it turned into like one of those battles on Twitter.
It was horrible. It was a horrible game for three quarters, but then in the fourth quarter and in that overtime, it was just
comedy.
It was straight comedy.
That was very funny, but the key ingredient to bad football being so bad that it must be funny it becomes funny is that everybody must agree that it is bad.
Okay,
because if you get in a game like that where, I mean, I personally did not think that was like a horrible game to watch. Marcus and Gelhart very much did. Mm-hmm. I did, but I didn't care that they didn't, but there were some people that cared that people did not think that was a good game.
Oh,
and when you get that, that's not fun. Nobody has fun doing that.
Right,
Well, anyways,
this is a science.
So
it's science, science.
We're not expecting a lot of offense from these games. So if you're playing, I mean, there might be some contrarian plays in playoff DFS.
Yes.
Yep.
I've heard some smart people talking about the Raiders' running game is an interesting one, but who do you pick in that three-headed monster?
Yeah,
I wouldn't touch that.
And the Texans' defense has been really good this year.
Especially at home.
I mean, that's what I'm saying.
It's been really good at home.
Yeah.
Just overall.
They've kind of had a tale of two halves where earlier in the year you could pick on them on the ground. Later in the year, you have been able to throw on the Texans, too, with some of the injuries in their secondary. But now, yeah, I don't know if I want to be trusting Connor Cook to hit any throws.
Weeks 14 through 17, they have allowed 181.3 passing yards per game. So
I think there are potentially some contrarian plays on the Houston side. I think
for Daly, what about tight end?
Yeah, tight end.
Horowitz
is back.
Yeah. With Osweiler.
If Osweiler's there.
It's true.
I think even you know, Nuke could be an option. He had a big game.
Now, are we talking? 17. We're talking just straight DFS.
Straight DFS, not playoff challenge.
Straight DFS. Okay. Yeah,
In playoff challenge, I mean, I don't think anybody expects either of these teams to go very far.
We'll get into that.
And standard scoring at DFS is PPR, so I could see Nuke being an option there,
or at least half or full.
Matt Moore starting for the Dolphins versus the Steelers on Sunday. Ryan Tannehill wanted to go. He's dealing with a knee injury, but he has yet to practice. And Dolphins head coach Adam Gase said something dramatic has to happen for Ryan Tannehill to get the start. So,
well, he said he has to just practice, even if it's one day.
Yeah.
So if he practices on Friday, he's going to start on Sunday.
I think.
Or whenever they're playing.
I think he wants to get on the practice, but wasn't Adam Gase mentioning the fact that he's got to practice and look okay?
They wanted something. I think I saw the word escapability or something. Basically, they wanted to see if he can get himself out of trouble when the pass rush comes. I mean, look, I understand it. I understand you don't want to necessarily roll into a playoff situation with Matt Moore.
Right.
But, I mean, it looked like Tannehill was just done for the year. So
I know.
This seems very quick.
There's no doubt about it. Okay, so how about for DFS? Any tricky plays here? I mean, you're going Antonio Brown, I would imagine, right?
I think Kenny Stills could be an option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah?
Yeah.
He scored touchdowns, I think, in each of his last four games.
I think you know what you're getting yourself into with Kenny Stills.
Yeah, you got the boomer bust.
Well, I think Landry is actually a really good play, too.
Interesting.
I think – I can't remember the exact numbers, but just he has been much – much more productive in games where Miami has been losing. We saw that when they went on their run, when they started running the ball more, he started seeing a lot less targets. Then he popped up for that 14-target game in the game they got blown out. And Pittsburgh, I think, is heavily favored in this game.
Ten,
so
10 points.
10 points.
I saw from friends in the desert.
Some random place. Don't know where it is. But they're double digit, you know, favorites. You would think that this is a potential game script where Landry could see double digit targets.
I mean, you take a look at the quarterback landscape that's out there, and I know Matt Moore is not, you know, he's not a name guy, but you know, surprisingly, he's actually been pretty darn solid. He's had, you know, over 200 yards every single game, multiple touchdowns in every single game. He's only had one turnover in every game. I don't know. I'm actually don't feel that bad if I'm playing DFS, not playing Matt Moore, I'm saying, but using some of their passing options for the Miami Dolphins. I don't feel terrible about rolling those guys out there, even if Matt Moore is your starting quarterback.
Yeah, exact numbers, by the way. Landry saw 9.4 targets when Dolphins were underdogs in 2016 and only 6.2 when they were favored.
All right. There you go. Where are we going? Chicago. The GM there, Ryan Pace, said, quote, anything is on the table regarding quarterback. Jay Cutler recovering from a torn labrum in his shoulder. They're not exactly sure what they want to get done there, but I would imagine they're going to cut Jay Cutler. But what does that mean for 2017? If they go with Matt Barkley, which they very well may could, what do they got? They got a top three pick. I don't know if a quarterback they like will be there. But what does it mean for the passing options there in Chicago in 2017?
Huge question mark.
Jeez, yeah.
You have no idea. Only thing isn't Jeffrey potentially going to be
a free agent?
I don't
expect him to come back.
I'd be pretty shocked.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Cameron
despite
Meredith,
his guarantee, they're going to the Super Bowl.
I mean, they can buy a ticket like everybody else. Cameron Meredith, I think, slides in potentially as the number one receiver in that offense. I mean, there's just so many questions. There's Jordan Howard, and then there's kind of a bunch of question marks around there.
Does it impact Jordan Howard? I'm starting to see a lot of hype train for Jordan Howard getting into the first round. Do you guys buy that? Given that the offense could be an absolute disaster?
Right. It could be a The good thing about him is that he saw so much involvement in the passing game. So if they're bad and they're in negative game scripts, so
even when they were losing by a lot, he's still getting 100 yards a game at the end of the season. But I don't know if I buy him as a first round pick.
Yeah, I mean,
very aggressive.
I don't know if he's. I mean, he's not David Johnson, where you're confident he can just overcome having a bad offense around him. He looked good. He looked good for much of last year, but I just wonder. You know, if the defensive coordinator goes in to face the Bears next year and realizes that there's no quarterback, there are no real receiving options,
right,
and they just stack the box, like, I don't know if Jordan Howard is the same guy.
I mean, a big part of the reason why I bought it to David Johnson and was starting to fade off of Todd Gurley, and obviously Matt Harmon did a great job explaining why Todd Gurley most likely was not going to, you know, give you good results. David Johnson, he was playing with Bruce Arians. I think you believe in Bruce Arians. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Do I believe in John Fox? No.
No.
Or absolutely.
Dowell Loggins?
No. That's a name.
Womp, womp.
The Loggins.
And that's what would make me worried about Jordan Howard. You know, even if he I got to imagine, just because with the positional, you know, scarcity that there is, Jordan Howard, there's going to be some movement to get Jordan Howard near the end of the first round, early part of the second round. I don't know, man. I'm going
to
be scared off.
Yeah.
And to be fair about the Bears, too, you know, and this was a lot of what people said about Gurley last offseason was, well, you know, as a rookie, he did it with bad quarterback play. He did, you know, and he did it.
Right, right.
That doesn't always carry over year to year. And also, to be fair with the Bears, they actually got pretty reasonably good quarterback play out of Brian Hoyer.
Yeah.
Out of even Matt Barkley for a little bit of a
stretch. They did.
Before. I mean,
100%.
He still was productive, even though he turned the ball over like a madman.
Yeah.
Lately. So, I mean, I think that next year it could – you always think, like, well, it can't get worse. It can always get worse.
It can always get worse, baby.
It'll be worth watching, too, with Jordan Howard, just one quick thing.
Yeah.
How his offensive line shakes up, because they had signed Josh Sitton, but the Packers let him go for injury issues, and then he gets injured a bunch this year. Kyle Long, their best offensive lineman, ended up on IR.
Yep.
Shoulder and ankle injuries and stuff. So that's something to look at, too, because that's also what conspired against Gurley this year was bad quarterback play, a bad offense, and a really bad offensive line.
Yep.
That's a good point.
And a coach that ran a middle school offense. So there you go. playoff challenge. How do you play? Let's go to Alex Gelhar. Explain the game in general.
So I did write up a beginner's guide on this.
Yes,
you guys can find it at NFL.com/Gelhar. But basically it's the same. We had the perfect challenge game. It's kind of a daily fantasy setup here. But in playoff challenge, you can pick a lineup each week. However, it's standard scoring, but the caveat is that each week certain players are in your lineup, you get bonus multipliers for them being in that lineup. So what you kind of want to do with the game, and you can change players out once they, if their team loses. Like, say you pick, you know, Steelers or Packers this weekend in your lineup, and either of those teams lose, you can swap them out for Cowboys or Falcons or whomever. There's
well,
no
not the Packers. They're not going to lose, are they? I mean,
there's no set AFC or NFC assignments. You just pick basically the players you think are going to end up in the Super Bowl.
Right.
Because, like, if you pick all Patriots and Cowboys, say, you think they're going to be in the Super Bowl, your first week you will get 0 points.
Right.
But every point they score in the divisional round
is double.
Double.
And times
every
two.
After that,
every point they score, yep.
Times three.
So you could play it, you know, where each week you reshuffle your lineup and try and pick the highest scorers, but
right,
you lose out on those multipliers.
Yeah, and that's where
extra,
the money's made.
Yep, and that's where the money's made and the extra strategy comes into play. And that while there is no money, say, per se, to be made in this game,
right,
the winner
yes
gets a trip with one guest, I believe, to Super Bowl 52
hello
in Minneapolis.
Oh,
give me some of that.
So you don't even have to go to Houston.
Popular tourist destination.
Bring a jacket.
February. Minneapolis.
Bring a jacket.
Minneapolis is a great city, but it could be very, very cold.
All right. So in terms of playoff challenge, a big-time strategy is figuring out who's going to get
the
Super Bowl.
Quick.
Right.
One thing to add, apologies to international listeners, but it's only for people in the continental United States, I believe, that can play. I had somebody from Canada asking me about it. I don't know why. I would just presume or assume that it has something to do with extra legal insurance.
So wait,
things,
you said like continental. Does that mean like Alaska and Hawaii are
I forget
shut
if
out
they
also?
Can play or not. They might be able to, but it's basically United States. Like
sounds
Canada,
rigged.
Mexico stuff, cannot. But legal stuff, I don't know. That's all way above my pay grade.
But
like,
don't stop listening to the podcast because we'll still talk about playoff
we've
football.
Got, and you got to hear the best of podcast section.
That's true. There is that as well. All right, so the big-time strategy, obviously, and the key component of playoff challenge is that you not only have to figure out who's going to play well, but also players that you believe are going to make it to the Super Bowl.
Right.
With that in mind, franchise, who do you like in playoff challenge?
I'm going with the Falcons and the Steelers as my main two teams.
Okay.
So the only guy on my roster that I have in there is my tight end who's not on either team. I want Travis Kelce just because he's really good.
Right.
So the Steelers play this week in the wild card round, and I'm a Steelers fan.
So there you go.
So you're I'm a little bit biased, so but I went with Lev Bell, Antonio Brown, and the Steelers D, and my quarterback is Matt Ryan. Got Devonta Freeman as my RB2, Julio Jones as my wide receiver 2, and Matt Bryan as my kicker. So that's my lineup.
It's a pretty good-looking lineup.
One of the other strategies is, like, everyone – most of the time people are going to pick the favorites to be in the Super Bowl, right? Like, the one seeds, like the Patriots and the Cowboys.
Right.
So if you want to get an edge, it's kind of like doing DFS where you go contrarian. Ooh. And you might be able to, like, gain an edge if you pick, like, the sleeper teams.
Right.
And they end up going all the way.
I don't know what exactly the numbers would be, but I would imagine Tom Brady's probably the most popular fantasy challenge.
He is in 27% of lineups this week.
Ah.
Rodgers is the number one owned. But I think people are not picking Brady because he's on bye this week, right? So that might be playing
part of
in.
The,
and
right.
They're assuming that the Packers are going to move on to next week as
right.
well.
Correct. So, and you can see those ownership percentages in the tool when you go into build.
NFL.com/playoff challenge, by the way, guys, if you want to play at home.
MG?
I went heavy Patriots. I'm one of the people who has Tom Brady, so yeah. I got Brady, LeGarrette Blount, the Ghost, and the Patriots defense because I have a pretty good feeling that in their second round, since they have the bye in the divisional round, I feel like they're going to get a shot at either Brock Osweiler or Connor Cook, which, you know, kind of makes me confident about their...
They'll probably win either way.
I did go with a couple Packers because I have a feeling they're gonna. I think they'll slide out of the NFC and be.
Okay.
They were actually my preseason Super Bowl prediction was Packers Patriots. It would be the quarterback matchup to end all quarterback matups.
Right.
I've got Jordy Nelson and Devontae Adams in there. I do have Zeke Elliott at the running back spot because I can get double points from him next round.
Yeah.
And he is good at football. The only player I have that I think, you know, that I just kind of went with based on matchups and ability is Travis Kelce. Again, he has a bye, but he's been the hottest tight end going for the last month or so.
Yeah, sure.
And get those double points in the second round there. So, I feel pretty confident about this one. We'll see.
Matt Harmon.
Yeah, I went heavy Chiefs and Falcons.
Did you?
Ooh,
I think
you.
If you're going to go with – for Falcons, I mean, the logic there – is they were the best offense this year. They scored 540 points, which is amazingly 71 points more than the Saints, who were the second highest scoring offense. That's crazy.
It's a lot of
that
points.
Is insane.
Which, you know, we'll talk about this, you know, later on for next year, but that's a number that's going to
That's outrageous.
That's going to come down.
Yeah.
By the way. So, but for this year at least,
regression.
It's going to be some
regression.
We're already starting
2017 regression
watch
talk.
2017.
Okay. Here Yep.
Jesus.
Yeah, buddy.
2017 regression watch. Here we go.
But so, I mean, speaking of somebody that's probably going to regress next year, you know, from a touchdown to touch perspective, Tevin Coleman, I think, makes a really good play in these because he's been a big play threat all year. He has, I think, 3 touchdowns of 30 or more yards. He's also been a red zone factor. He scored on 46.7% of his touches inside the 10-yard line, which, again, astronomically high. But if that continues into the playoffs, you got a good chance. And he's 0% started right now.
Interesting. Right, because everyone's going to go with Freeman.
Everyone will be on
I think
Freeman.
He climbed up to 1%.
Well, he's under 2.
He had 11 total touchdowns this year,
yes,
I think.
11
That's
total
crazy.
Touchdowns.
And he missed games.
Yeah, he missed a bunch of games.
Yeah, he had 11.5 touches per game.
That's
and
great.
Scored 11
wow.
touchdowns. So that's pretty outrageous, you know, something to watch for next year.
Yep.
But I think that he would make a good, like, kind of contrarian play as well.
I got to imagine if you're taking Chiefs, you like Tyreek Hill.
You could definitely go with Tyreek Hill. I think, you know, in the potential scenario I'm painting here with the Falcons make it to the Super Bowl and see the Chiefs, then you might. It's hard to not say Julio Jones. And also, I really want to share of Antonio Brown in this game because I think a lot of people, when they go Steelers, will go for Le'Veon Bell. He's 74% started right now.
Yeah.
Antonio Brown's 61% too. So that actually almost makes me want to go with Odell against the
Packers
because I think he blows up in this game. And if they beat
Dude, he didn't blow up in the first game they played against each other, and I have a horrible feeling he's just going to rip right through him.
Right. No, bro, he's just being a distraction you know.
The media is going to get to his head.
But I think so on the Chiefs' point, though, I think the best strategy there is going with their defense. Because, you know, you do have to pick a defense in this.
And you get Tyreek.
Yeah, exactly.
You get a share of Tyreek Hill there.
Yeah.
And also, like, Chiefs at home, at least for one game, that's really tempting.
All right. What about it, Wiz?
All Packers.
Also, some homerism, but the Packers are hot right now. So I went with the Packers passing attack. I've got Rodgers, Nelson, and Adams. Yeah. Cobb's still banged up. I grabbed Mason Crosby for the kicker because I figured they could be in a couple good matchups here, especially they're in round two if they advance. Going to travel in a dome somewhere in two games that could be very high scoring with Dallas and Atlanta. And then on the flip side, I went all Patriots. I stacked both their running backs. I went LeGarrette Blunt and Deion Lewis.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Because Deion Lewis, over the last 4 weeks of the season, actually had more rushing yards than LeGarrette Blunt. He didn't get into the end zone.
Oh, was that right?
James White was still the primary pass catcher, but I'm wondering if after another week, Lewis is a little more healthy with the bye, that role comes back. And also, as Marcus said, the Patriots are figuring to play Connor Cook or Brock Osweiler at home in round two. That figures to be a run-heavy game script. I will gladly double up on all the potential running back touchdowns there.
It's gross.
Tight end, I'm riding. In the past, I've mixed and matched teams more. This year, I wanted to try just going with two teams.
Marty B?
So I went with Marty B.
Okay.
Figure he's going to be a big beneficiary of the bye too because he was carrying a couple lower body injuries.
Yep.
Still getting used, especially in the red zone with that huge frame. And then I grabbed the Patriots defense because Packers defense not great right now. And again, the Patriots get to play Connor Cook or Brock Osweiler in round two.
Let's say it one more time. They get to play Connor Cook or Brock Osweiler in round two.
I mean, if it's not Steelers-Pats in the AFC Championship game.
Dude, the Chiefs.
The Chiefs. I would not sleep on the Chiefs.
No? Yeah. No.
Chiefs at home.
That home field advantage.
The Steelers have to travel to.
You know what? That's
true. It's going to be loud. It's going to be cold.
Arrowhead is one of the hardest stadiums to go into and play in.
This all makes me very nervous as a Steelers fan.
Chiefs can put points on you now, too. You know, we know that Kelsey's been balling. They have an X factor in Tyreek Hill. And let's not forget, the two games where Alex Smith has ever come out of his shell has been in the playoffs. Has been against the Saints when he was with the 49ers that year, and then against the Colts when the Colts came back in that 2013 playoff
game. That's right.
Such an awesome game.
That was an amazing game. I really hope we get a good playoff game like that.
All right,
I know we will, because I believe.
All right, so
I think the divisional round is going to be lit.
Yeah, it should be.
For both.
Oh, I'm so excited. Oh, we have to get through all this stupid fantasy crap all year to get to the good playoff games.
Wow.
Just to put the capper on this, the playoff challenge, so you get the multipliers.
Yeah.
So every single week. But the multipliers do apply. Let's say you went with who am I trying to think of? Let's say you went with Odell Beckham.
Yeah.
Okay. But he gets eliminated, right? You can go pick up Jordy, and now you get
Get the multiplier.
You don't get the multiplier.
No, but do you get the multiplier if Jordy then advances to the NFC Championship?
Then it becomes two times.
Two times and not three.
Each consecutive week, you get the bonus multiplier.
Right. So there is that small distinction that's good to know.
So another strategy none of us did was if you think there are two hot enough wild card teams to make it all the way to the Super Bowl, like perhaps Packers and Steelers, like you could stack your lineup with them and get four times multipliers the whole way through.
It's pretty good.
Right.
I like it. All right, so there you go, playoff challenge. Tell the folks where to find it.
NFL.com/playoff challenge. You can go to MyWriterPager, NFL.com/fantasy to find the beginner's guide, and then I'll be posting all of our lineups with a little write-up tomorrow.
I like it.
So you can check it out there on Thursday on NFL.com/fantasy.
Okay, good stuff. All right, let's talk about some lessons that we have learned in 2016. How do we apply them to 2017? Matt Harmon, we'll start with you.
Oh, we're starting with me.
Yes, absolutely.
All right, well,
what lessons did you learn, pal?
I think that the biggest thing is that, you know, and this might seem counterintuitive, or not counterintuitive, this might just seem like naturally something you would assume.
Yes.
Is that, you know, this league changes. There's a lot of variance, you know, year to year, not even just week to week. You know, I came into this year pretty heavily invested in wide receiver heavy teams, you know, even some zero RB teams. And that wasn't a great approach this year results wise because wide receiver scoring was so much lower this year. I'm writing a piece on this for Friday, so you can read it then. But there was just so much of an outlier year in terms of wide receiver production than had been the last 3 to 5 years. So, and I think that's an important thing to, one, for me not to get caught up in just this year's results, because it's all about how are things trending, and is the league still the same way? And yes, it is still a passing league. The passing play percentage as a whole in the NFL went up this year. So it's not as if running backs are, you know, there's more rush attempts to go around or anything like that. So I think that's an important thing to keep in mind, is just for me that there's so much variance in what can happen in 1 year, but not to lose sight of the big picture of the way the league is trending. And I still think that is trending to very much more of a pass-heavy team. And we could easily, just like we saw the running back pendulum swing back this year,
yeah,
we could easily see it go back to the mean next year with more high-end running backs getting hurt and high-end wide receivers being more productive.
So I guess the question is this. If the league is moving towards more pass attempts per game per team, and yet wide receiver scoring has been down, where were those points accumulated? At running back, passing game, running game? Or
I tried to kind of, and I'm not done yet trying to dig into that. It doesn't seem that there's more, like, and especially in terms of top 12 fantasy backs, receptions and yards among the running backs in the passing game are still pretty, like, linear. Okay. There's not a huge change. I think what we're actually seeing more, and this could be just this year, it could be something that's developing going forward, is there's more overall production. I know I was showing you this graph where, like, the top 50 scoring wide receivers, there was more guys that had seen, like, 90 targets in a game as opposed to, like, 70 targets. So it almost seems like it's just getting spread
around.
Spread out, yeah.
Mike Evans.
Interesting you mentioned that. Like, I just to jump in super quick, because literally before the podcast we were looking at one of the bet wager things we're going to settle, and it was with the Cowboys, and I was looking at their distribution. I was like, wow, they had three people with over 90 targets. They didn't have anybody like over 100.
That's crazy.
But then I was just pulling up the target totals for this year and looking at it by team, and there were a lot of teams that had a much more spread out kind of approach. Was that kind of what you were hinting at there, Harmon?
Yeah, that's essentially what I'm saying. Like, Mike Evans led the NFL with 173 targets, and over, which is much lower than last year. We had Julio Jones see 200.
Yeah.
And from 2012 to 2015, there were 10 wide receivers who saw more than 180 targets over that span. So it just kind of shows you what, like, a strange year in terms of high-end wide receiver production. You know, Larry Fitzgerald led the NFL with 107 catches, which was the lowest it's ever been in the last decade. Hmm. So it's – and, again, you can say maybe that's something that's, like, a new trend developing, or it's just a – you know.
Well, what's your thought?
I'm still kind of working through that, but I think that we really did see the passing game spread out a lot more. And I wonder if it is something that teams will do more going forward, because, just look, the Falcons to Bucks example is a really good one. Like, the Bucks were not a good team this year on the whole, and then the Falcons, especially last year when they stuffed 200 targets to Julio Jones, were a bad football team.
Yeah. True.
They weren't good. Their offense especially wasn't good. And then this year, where Julio Jones was averaging 9 targets a game as opposed to 12 targets per game, they were a much better offense because they were able to develop multiple threats. And I wonder if that's something, like, you know, as fantasy owners, you know, we certainly love when our players are getting a ton of targets, but I also wonder if other teams will, you know, going forward, whether that's going to be something that they
spread
want to do, you know, whether they want to do that or they think they're better.
I mean, Tom Brady and the Patriots been doing that for a decade now.
Yeah.
So I mean,
yeah.
I guess it makes a whole heck of a lot of sense. MG, kind of piggybacking off of that idea, what are your thoughts there? Do you think that the pass distribution just, again, remains relatively even among a bunch of different options, making it hard to find that quote unquote elite receiver?
Well, I think when you see teams that are funneling a lot of targets to one guy, I think it's not by choice. It is sort of because out of necessity. I mean, I think if you had gone and asked the Colts this year, do you want T.Y. Hilton to have 27% of your targets? I think they would say, well, no. I mean, I think they would have preferred, you know, that Dante Moncrief was there more often to get the ball to him. I think they would prefer that Philip Dorsett was more of a playmaker, so he could see more passing, more targets in the passing game. I mean, I think in a perfect world, everybody would want to be the Patriots or the Saints or a team like that that has a whole bunch of even the Falcons this year.
Good point.
That, you know, it wasn't Julio Jones centric, which I know frustrated a lot of people.
Can I jump in, though? I think about this now, because you say that the successful team spread it around, yet we have this whole mantra here in the stronghold, right? Throw it to your good players.
Yeah.
Right? So, so sometimes isn't the best offense throwing it to your good players?
I mean, I was saying for weeks that no matter how many times they throw it to Odell Beckham, it's never enough.
That's true.
But I think some of it is because, I mean, I think some of these teams, they have good players that are just other world. Odell Beckham is so head and shoulders above so many other players in this league.
That's right.
That, yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know that you can say that, say, in New Orleans, where, you know, you got Brandon Cooks and Michael Thomas and Willie Snead, who are all fairly good playmakers, but not one of those guys is what you consider elite compared to everybody else.
I think there's a difference between ignoring your good player when you have one good player. Like, you see with the Cowboys, prior to this year, like, especially in 2015, they'd go long stretches without throwing it to Dez Bryant. Like, oh, let's make sure we get Cole Beasley and Terrence Williams and hand it off to Darren McFadden. Like, there's a difference between doing that and, like, if you're the Falcons this year and you have all these other options. But when they needed Julio Jones, they had Julio Jones to go to, and they did not ignore it. I mean, think back to that game against Carolina where he just ripped them to shreds. So I think there's a difference between, you know, ignoring your good player and ramming it to your good player no matter what.
All right, WizKid, did you learn anything from 2016 that you could apply to 2017?
I think the lesson that I've learned, and I want to dig more into this offseason, is trying to find a blend of both as we're evaluating players and situations, talent and opportunity. Because there are two sides to this all the time in, like, fantasy discussions of, like, tape study versus metrics or, you know, analytics and numbers and stuff like that. And I think we have to be able to find a blend, because when I first started doing this, like, more seriously professionally a couple years ago, I was relying more on my eye. And I hit on a couple of those guys early, like Nuke in his second year breakout and Mark Ingram in his resurgence and stuff like that. But there are also certain situations where you have to figure out a blend of both their talent and the opportunity that could be presented. One of the ones I missed on this year, at least early, was Michael Thomas, because I was worried with him coming to that loaded Saints attack that I loved his talent coming out of Ohio State, but I was worried he wasn't going to see enough volume to week to week trust, because in the last 10 years, Breeze had only thrown 120 plus targets to a receiver five times. Like, you think of all the targets he throws, all the 5,000 yard seasons. Harmon did that good study on 120 target wide receivers, and it only happened five times in 10 years. So, like, I kind of overassessed his talent and his usage, which would probably be primarily in the red zone, which I think he far and away led that team. Let me pull that up super quick. But, you know, figuring out a marriage of the two, and, like, you know, because there are certain situations, too, where if the opportunities aren't presented, we've seen talented players sink before, like Nuke this year, although none of us expected him to sink to this level.
Yeah.
So
I don't think anybody thought Brock was going to be this
bad. Michael Thomas did lead the Saints with 19 red zone targets and had 7 touchdowns in that space. So figuring out the marriage of both talent and opportunity and how to better equate that moving forward as we're projecting to 2017 has been my lesson that I learned.
Franchise?
I guess my lesson, we were talking about this before we started recording, but there's already on the Twitter sphere conversations about draft strategy for next year already.
And oh, boy.
The zero RB versus the zero wide receiver and the only draft good players and all this. There's so many different variables that go into every single fantasy draft. I'm not getting involved in any of this crap anymore. I understand how zero RB can work. I understand how zero wide receiver can work. I also understand that every league is different. You have a different draft spot in every league.
That's a great point.
There's no one way that this strategy can win or lose your league, and there's no reason that you have to knock down a strategy for no reason other than you don't believe in it.
Okay. Yeah.
I think
think that latter part's probably the most important.
Yeah,
but
so
the beginning part is,
yeah.
The latter part is the good point
and
to take away.
Like I'm my league of record. You can start 5 wide receivers every week. It's a half point PPR. There's a bunch of flex spots. So the last 2 seasons, I think I've drafted 5 wide receivers with my first 5 picks. I went 10-3 last year. I made it to the championship this year, and I lost, but. It depends on the setup of your league.
That's true.
Where your draft spot is.
Yeah.
Knowing your...
Who's available.
Yeah, like it's... Like all these arguments are just so pointless. And why are we having... It's January. Yeah.
I liked a
couple Can we
people,
not talk about this for like a month?
A couple people made the point that they were like, the 2016 fantasy season body isn't even cold yet.
Right.
I think like Al Smizzle and somebody else had said that. And I'm like, yeah, I'm kind of with you.
And well, I get it. I get it because this is what we do. But
No. But when you say this is what we do, it's... For a lot of folks, it's important for them to be right.
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 Right. Because that's how they build their brand is, well, I'm a quote-unquote fantasy expert, so I need to be right.
Give me a break.
And if I'm not right, then I feel as if I am not a fantasy football expert or something along those lines.
But, it's okay to be wrong.
Here's the secret. If you're wrong,
that's right.
No one's going to remember it.
Okay if you're wrong. So
that's
a couple people tweet at you.
That's not true. The internet will always remember.
The internet remembers.
Alter it to say, important is
okay.
I think a good point about franchises discussion here is like, it's hard to look back, you know, with only like a results based.
The internet's calling us.
The internet's calling.
Tell us we're wrong.
Yep.
Yeah. Actually, you guys are all wrong.
Yeah. But
I think the fun thing is, like, looking back in hindsight is easy, but you know, everything, like I mentioned earlier, everything this year led you to think, like, yeah, this is going to be – that's the zero RB is the way to go.
Yeah.
The wide receiver heavy is the way to go. And then here we are a few months later, and that was incorrect. But the process of how you got there is very accurate, and I think that just goes to show you that there's so much randomness, so much volatility in this league that it's important to be humble. It's important to realize, like, yeah, I was wrong about that prediction this year.
Actually, it's funny because I actually went zero RB in two of my main leagues, and in both leagues I got to the championship game using the zero RB strategy. I think my starting running back in one league was Latavius Murray.
Yeah,
I was running out Latavius Murray and Jerick McKinnon in that league.
And I think that's another good point too, that like strategies are just, for one, they're options. Like, they're not cheat codes. Like, even if you were a zero RB zealot going into this year, you'd have to admit that it's just an option. Like, and you could get to a point where it's like, there's a running back here I'd like to take, and like what am I just going to pass it up just because I want to follow this strategy? No, that's
right.
Crazy. Like, it's an option. And two, like, they're not cheat codes. It's just one part of the fantasy experience.
Yeah,
like,
right.
You can draft a great zero RB team, but if you don't manage it properly and don't hunt for those backup running backs like Jordan Howard or you know, whatever,
Rob Kelly,
then it doesn't matter. It's all part of the experience.
And the other thing is feeling out how your draft goes. If everyone's taking running backs early, you have an advantage in getting a couple top wide receivers while everyone's loading up on running backs.
It's
flopped the other way around, feel it out and zig when everyone else zags or whatever the case may be.
Right.
Understand positional value and, like, don't take everything we or other analysts say as gospel, too, because, like, franchise is a good point, too, is that most leagues are different.
Yeah. That's true.
Yeah, it's just point. It's like, take what we say and see how it might apply to you. And like, I don't think anybody in this room or behind the glass with Gelhar would present ourselves as anybody but just like people with opinions.
Yeah,
people with some thoughts. And yeah, we've looked at numbers more than you guys, and we recommend you don't look at numbers as much as we do. Like, to remain a normal, balanced
sane
person. I think of, like, just take some of it, see how it applies to you, and, you know, again, things can easily change quickly.
This was fantasy therapy session.
It worked out well.
This is good.
It's good, good audible in the rundown there.
Yeah, I like it. MG, you got a lesson here?
I mean, I do. I think one of the things I took away from this year, I think we saw it near the end of the year especially, was the value of sort of hybrid players. And I remember a couple of years ago in the preseason, I had kind of jokingly said that, you know, hybrid or multiple was kind of the buzzword.
It
and,
was.
You know, and I didn't quite follow up on that much this year. But I think whether it was the elite guys, you know, the David Johnsons and the Le'Veon Bells, seeing how often they lined up out of the backfield at wide receiver positions and were extremely effective there, to even some of the guys that we saw really emerge later in the year, whether it was Taylor Gabriel or Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
You know, these guys who can do multiple things and be effective at them. I mean, as much as I, you know, don't
kudos want to those coaches to figuring out ways to get them the ball in space, though.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, but we saw it a little bit with, you know, in some ways with Ty Montgomery, obviously making the switch to running back. We saw it, I think, with the tight end spot. I know tight end was kind of a wasteland this year, but some of the more effective guys. I mean, you know, obviously you've got Gronk, who can do everything. You've got
Delanie Walker,
who lined up at a slot position more than he lined up at tight end. Travis Kelce, who moved all over the formation. This is the way of the world now in the NFL, when you have guys who are just uber athletic, who can get out there and do multiple things on the football field. So yeah, you know, I think we're going to see this, especially when we get to July and August. It's already starting now with this conversation of who should be the number one overall pick. And
yeah,
the first three names that popped up, obviously David Johnson, Le'Veon Bell, Ezekiel Elliott.
Yep.
And I would say right now, of those three, Zeke is my number three, simply because he doesn't do the same work in the Cowboys passing game that those other two guys do in their team's respective passing games.
Right.
I mean, you saw during the season this year, A lot of times in passing situations, or especially late game situations when the Cowboys needed to move the ball quickly, you saw a lot more Lance Dunbar on the field than you did Ezekiel Elliott. You didn't, okay. You certainly didn't see him, you know, lining up as a slot receiver and trying to, you know, and forcing coverages to roll his way. So I think because of that, I think you still can feel confident in David Johnson, regardless of what may happen in the Cardinals' offense this year.
Right.
You can certainly feel confident about Lev Bell.
But David Johnson was so old for a rookie, though.
Old for a second year running.
Good callback.
I'm leaving.
There you go. So I mean,
you're old for a third year fan.
Stop.
But I think it's key to kind of identify some of those players who can be that Swiss Army knife. I mean, obviously, if you can get an elite level guy, that's amazing. But I think even in terms of finding role players, finding those flex guys or those RB2s or wide receiver twos who can do multiple things, because that keeps them on the field more, that gets the ball sent in their direction a lot more, and I think it, in the long run, will help you out.
Ah, that's good stuff. All right. Let's talk about a change that you would make in standard scoring leagues. I don't know if anyone else has anything else, but I get fired up about it because, for me...
Take the floor, James.
Yeah, I get fired up because in typical standard scoring leagues where passing touchdowns are 4 points, it devalues quarterback so much, and it does not reflect what we're actually seeing on the field. I think that's a big disservice, because we are in a league where the top flight quarterbacks are the ones that lead their teams to victories and deep into the playoffs. But yet in fantasy, they're interchangeable parts. That doesn't feel right. And I currently only play seriously in leagues where passing touchdowns are 6. And I was a big reason for that, because I get crazy about it, because I'm like, this doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense whatsoever. And the other thing I'd love to see too, and I don't play any leagues that do this, but I think interceptions and turnovers, fumbles lost, I think they should be -3. That, and the reason I'm saying that is because we can't have guys like Blake Bortles be a top 10 quarterback. We can't. You can't lead the league in interceptions and still be a good fantasy player. To me, that just doesn't feel right.
It's the Mark Bulger Award.
I say I will. Which,
wait,
by the way,
back-to-back champ.
You know that will be announced shortly. We'll have that coming for the end of the week.
Good.
I will say the corollary to that, though, is I actually would like to see pick sixes maybe cost you more. Maybe they cost you
a pick
4
six.
Or 5, or maybe
six
they cost you 6 points.
So that Blake really does have to work
Blake
on his
Bortles,
tackling.
Right, so that Blake Bortles has to work on his tackling, or at least, you know, learn to not throw it to the wrong color jersey.
Well, let's not ask too much.
You guys know who led the league in interceptions this year?
Wasn't it Blake Bortles?
It was not Blake Bortles.
It was not.
Oh, let me. It's Philip Rivers.
It's Philip Rivers.
Oh, it's Philip Rivers.
He was the only one with more than 20, right?
21.
Correct. 21.
Blake had 16.
Oh, boy.
He did lead the league last year. James, if I'm going to
piggyback,
provide an ancillary thing to your thing here, like, I don't know if so much the answer is increasing the points for amount of touchdowns you throw. I think that helps, but it doesn't necessarily increase the value of the position overall, because everybody gets that boost. I think the best way to make more quarterbacks relevant, make them more important, is actually add a flex spot for quarterbacks.
Super flex?
Like a super flex.
Oh, no.
Why?
I like it.
That's what adds the value to your quarterbacks, because then when you have one of the elite ones, it's more of an advantage over the guy that's starting Alex Smith and Brock Osweiler.
I was going to say, nobody cares about your fantasy teams, but I have a Superflex Dynasty
Where's
league.
Where's the mug?
Yeah, I know. Where's the mug? Where's the shirt?
Anyways.
I have a Superflex Dynasty league, and my two quarterbacks in there are Tyrod Taylor and Alex Smith. And, like, I can – well, my team sucks because it sucks all around. But it's a pain having to have those as my two quarterbacks every week and then, like, hoping I catch fire with a backup like Matt Barkley, which I did this year too, as opposed to the guy that has, you know, Aaron Rodgers and Drew Brees or something. Like, that's a pretty big positional advantage, because that flex spot, it's got to be the quarterback.
The reason I don't advocate that is because it's not fun playing bad players. It's just not.
Yeah, but isn't there some fun in trying to do the research on
the
deeper guy who's going to perform well that week or whatever it is?
You're talking to one of the deans of Danger Zone. So, yes.
That's a good point.
Of course.
Deans of Danger Zone.
I love doing the deep research on rando players.
That's what's fun.
It is. It is. And watching random, you know, Abilene Christian game tape. Okay, fine. I do that. Yes, I get it. But and I get off on it, which is great. But... I don't know, man. Every single week, trying to play a bad player, it's just not fun. I don't enjoy that. I enjoy watching, you know, guys like Aaron Rodgers slinging around and making a huge impact. And I just feel like if you added negative three to the interceptions, it really separates the cream from the bottom feeders. You know what I'm saying?
I can see that.
So I guess
I actually didn't think I had one, but I'm gonna throw one in.
Please
get kickers out.
Get kickers out? No, you don't like it too random?
Out.
I hate kickers.
You know what? I will tell you this. I lost both my championships, actually. Well, I don't know if I could blame it on a kicker, but I did lose. I legitimately lost one championship because somebody ran out a kicker who got 20 points.
Matt Bryant?
Matt Bryant!
Yeah, Matt Bryant. 19
okay, so
points.
I'm on the other side of that 20 coin because Matt Bryant helped me win in the Experts League. So, boom.
I hate it.
And that's too random. I think that's too random.
It is so at least with a defense, you can kind of predict.
Yeah, that's a little
the
too
The kicker
random.
Is completely unpredictable.
It's a
although,
wild card.
If I'm in a well, actually, it is a total, like, statistically, it is the second most predictable position.
How is
outside
that?
Outside of quarterbacks. Because for the main kickers mostly over the course of the season.
We're the main kickers.
You know, like your boy Gaskowski. I mean, in the course of one season, like from a week to week perspective, not right. a year to year, get out of here.
But
like,
you got to figure out, you know, a couple weeks in who right. those guys are going
right.
to be.
Yeah, that's all I'm saying. From a week to week perspective, it's pretty predictable. The same guys, but you're right; those guys will randomly pop up for a big week, and when they get 20 points, it's very frustrating. I am not trying to advocate for kickers. I'm just.
I mean, I get that random players will pop up and do crazy things, but on a week to week basis, but. Kickers,
nothing
though.
Is more upsetting than looking at a great fantasy lineup being like, man, why am I not winning? And then seeing that your kicker has his offense had a great performance. But
great performance.
He kicked four extra points.
Yep.
The other side is Justin Tucker, who kicked 350-yard field goals in one game, and you're staring at like a 20 spot. And you're
I
like,
know.
What in the hell?
And, yeah, but that double-digit deficit is so hard to overcome in fantasy.
Yeah. At a kicker position. Like
at
that.
A kicker position. Yeah, that's
so that's why there's just so much volatility, and it's like – like few, it's so random because like so few people, except for like diehards, will actually like stream kickers or something.
Yeah,
like most people just get a kicker and set it and forget it.
Right,
unless the guy gets injured.
It's
so like,
true.
It's that up and down peak and valley there that's obnoxious. Whereas
yeah,
like you said,
true.
Defenses, it's a little more fun because you can stream or you get your elite ones.
Oh yeah.
The rest of the positions, I love kickers. They're an important part of the NFL game, but get them out of fantasy.
Maybe jumping on top of that, maybe we dampen their impact. So you don't get bonuses for extra yardage.
Distance.
So it's everything is just three or one.
Yeah, I would be okay with that then too. Because then that I guess that adds some of the predictability to it, even a little more than what Harmon was saying in there. Because you know,
because
like,
19 points or 20 points or whatever for Matt Bryant, that's. Oh,
I mean, Justin Tucker
that hurts.
Tied an NFL record, I think, or set it with 10 50-plus yard field goals.
Jeez.
The next close.
I get the counter argument to that, too, which is, hey, listen, a 27-yard field goal is not the same as a 55-yard field goal, which I understand.
Still counts for the same amount of points, though, on
it
the scoreboard.
It does count for the same amount
it's
of points.
Like, yeah, an 80-yard touchdown's different than an 80-yard touchdown drive capped off by a 1-yard rushing touchdown. But
yeah. All right, so there you go. All right, so let's talk about let's wrap up basically.
We'll do these real quick and then get to the segment.
All right, so what is On Pace for? And if you guys are new to the podcast, I call Mark Ingram On Pace because you cannot talk about Mark Ingram without talking about what he is, quote, on pace for. Coming into the season, he had previously never had a 1,000-yard rushing season, and unfortunately, good narratives do die. Which is so sad. I'm
Victory.
Sad about this, not because I was wrong or not because, you know, I'm not happy for Mark Ingram. I'm happy for Mark Ingram, which is cool.
Not a completely terrible person.
I am a terrible
person. Not completely.
Okay. But I mean, but this narrative now has to die. It's
put
no
it
fun.
Bed. Put it to bed.
You know, because Mark Ingram finished with 1,043 rush yards, as somebody put this in bold, underline, and the giant font in the rundown.
It was anonymous manatee.
It was anonymous manatee.
Anyone want some tea?
1,043 rush yards. In many respects, it was the best year of his career.
For sure.
He had a career high in terms of total touchdowns. He had 10. Career high in yards per carry, over 5. He had a he had a great season.
By the way,
he did.
I'd like to take this time to pat myself on the back a little bit too, because I also said that he would have 10 touchdowns this year.
Did
nice.
You?
Wow.
Mark Ingram, 10 touchdowns.
Yeah, I said he'd have 10. Now I might have meant rushing, but whatever. He had 10 touchdowns. Whatever. That's not important.
It doesn't matter.
How he got it is not important.
I like he said after he got the 1,000 yards, he's going to buy frame all of his offensive linemen's jerseys and put them up in his house.
Yeah,
great.
Well, and it's a career year for Ingram because he played 16 games. You know, I mean, that's
right.
That's
and
the
I
biggest
think,
difference.
I like, think that, a big, I think a big part of him staying mostly healthy for the whole year is the fact that they had kind of a three-headed committee going there.
Yeah, isn't that what's funny? And because when he first got benched, everyone was freaking out.
Yeah.
But then ultimately, that may have helped him.
For sure.
He was more efficient this year than he was last year on the ground. Like, he averaged 64 yards per game last year and 65 this year, and he would average 4.6 yards per carry last year, 5.1 this year.
Yeah, it's pretty good. All right, let's talk about March to 1,100. I pegged Marvin Jones to get to 1,100 yards, and
after the first month of the season,
speaking of on pace,
man, well, first month of the season looked like that was a lock.
On pace, he was like on pace for 1,500 yards.
So bad. I don't know what happened here, but Marvin Jones, 55 receptions, 103 targets, so decent target totals, but just 930 yards, so he fell well short of 1,100.
Yes. Ooh,
His career high previously was 816 with the Bengals, but he did miss two games this year. I don't know if it would have made a difference.
I feel like
don't
he
think it would have.
Had an injury or something, and just
he was banged up for a little bit.
He just played through an injury that limited him.
You know,
that's got to be what.
That's
it was.
Kind of what his MO has been. Yeah. Not only with the Bengals, but even with Cal, he was, you know, kind of more of an injury-prone type player. But 930 yards, and it was crazy too, right? Because he had that 200-yard game, and you're thinking, yep, he's going to get to 1,100 by week 10.
Yeah. and then Golden Tate took over.
And then what happened? I don't get what happened.
I think if I could offer a theory about it, I think that
some
the
therapy?
First, I don't know about a therapy, but
you
know,
in
the first few
the
games,
advice.
Yes,
after
yes.
the Lions had shed Calvin Johnson,
yes.
He kind of stepped into that role as the number one outside receiver, and
right.
to a lot of people pointed this out, he'd never been that guy. You know, he was second fiddle to Keenan Allen, then he was second fiddle to A.J. Green.
That's a good point.
And then this year, he became that guy for the first three games, but they were still targeting him on a lot of, like, low percentage down the field routes. And
yeah.
When he was not seeing as strong a coverage because, you know, it was like, well, other teams, we're not going to game plan to stop Marvin Jones. Then he was making a lot of those plays. But then as more coverage rolled his way, it freed up things for others. And then those low percentage routes became even harder, which just extrapolated the issue. And I think that, you know, it's just at that point, you would still see him get targets, but it would always be, again, really tough catches, and they just never didn't bounce his way.
Yeah, I just feel like he couldn't get separation. Every time it looked like he was going for a deep ball, the guy was, like, on top of him.
I tweeted during that game against the Cowboys that at the time, from weeks 4 to week 15, he ranked 97 out of 97 receivers on separation to target.
Oh, dead last?
Yeah. Oh, no.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. That's not good.
I think
so, James.
Yes, sir.
No March to 1,100 next year?
Call it right now.
Call it right now. I'm going to do March to 1,100. Obviously, the last 2 years have not gone great because last year was Dante.
Kiss of death.
I know. Dante Moncrief just, I mean, although he got hurt again this year, so whatever. But, yeah, Dante Moncrief was my guy last year. But 2 years ago, it was Nuke Hopkins. Marvin Jones this year, and I thought it was looking good. I don't know, man. I don't know. We'll reexamine. The hard part about March to 1,100 is 1,100 yards is a good figure, but I have to go and pick a guy who is super random.
Right. Only 12 wide receivers got there.
I was just going to say, only 13 players total.
Total?
And one of them was Travis Kelce.
Interesting.
There were 25 receivers that had 1,000. But
I might have to figure out a way to mix in running backs. 1,100 total yards.
Oh, scrimmage?
Scrimmage. That I might have to – I don't know. We'll tweak it this offseason. We'll see what's up.
Rigged. That feels, rigged.
It does kind of feel rigged. Or maybe I'll find somebody that I really like when I start thinking about this in the offseason. But, all right, we'll keep
you'll be hyped up and ready for it by August.
Oh, you know I will.
Of course.
Let's talk about this.
Let's quickly bury the hatchet here on LaFell v. Boyd.
Okay, please do. Okay, so this was the thing. When A.J. Green went down, Matt Harmon, who's an idiot –
Matt
Harmon, who's an idiot.
Matt Harmon approached me and said, "You know what?
Just approach you, threw it out to the entire podcast."
That's true, and I bit like an idiot.
Which basically, because peel behind the curtain. Back peel like curtain here. Harmon discussed this, and he's like, I bet y'all get Coda buying on.
Yeah, because nobody we were talking about it in Slack or whatever. And I was like, man, none of you guys went in on this. I figured I'd get one of you, and I'm like, I'm gonna get Co on.
Yeah, I'm too predictable.
That's too easy.
That's too easy.
Younger guy, please. That's all I needed to know. One of these players was younger than the other.
That's a good point. AJ Green goes down with injury. Who would fill the void? Would it be, from a fantasy perspective, would it be Brandon LaFell or would it be Tyler Boyd? Matt Harmon picked Brandon LaFell.
With confidence.
With confidence. And he threw it out on the podcast, and I took the bait, and I said, oh, I'll take Tyler Boyd. No doubt. No doubt about it. And Brandon LaFell crushed.
He had 56.3 points, was the wide receiver 19 in those last 6 weeks of the season, or last whatever. Was it six games?
I think.
Anyways, from week 12 on.
Yeah.
Yes.
He was 56.3 points, wide receiver 19. During
he had more catches, more yards, more touchdowns.
Five
more
games.
Boyd had 30.9 points and was wide receiver 54.
Okay. Six games. So there you go.
And, again, I think, you know, Gelhard just kept spitting in my face about this in the newsroom.
Was not spitting in your face.
Totally spitting in my face.
All I said was I wanted to have more fun with it. I went with Boyd. I admitted that yours was the more predictable of the two.
Not my point. My point was that I
think – Not my narrative.
I think that this is a really important point for listeners is that, you know, because I think a lot of – and I'm not saying this is what you were saying, Gelhard, but a lot of people think like, oh, well, it's a younger guy. You know, he's going to have more upside. And the only thing that – dictates upside in fantasy is usage. And during that span, 52 targets for LaFell, 31 targets for Boyd. LaFell was targeted much more farther downfield. Boyd was just a low volume slot receiver. So I think in the future, you know, if you're making these decisions, you want to take the player that's going to see more high value targets, not the guy that's just younger and unknown. That does not dictate upside.
If I could defend myself.
Nope.
You may. Permission granted.
Okay, great. I actually thought that Tyler Boyd would fill that outside receiver role. That's what I thought the role that he was going to fill. I didn't think that he was going to be a slot possession guy. I just thought Brandon LaFell, we had seen enough tape on him. Athleticism was average at best. Not saying that Tyler Boyd was some a crazy, amazing athlete, which he's not. But I just thought that he was going to be a little quicker off the line, and I thought he would be the guy that that they were semi-grooming to kind of play outside for the Bengals offense. So that's what I thought going in when I took that proposition. Obviously, I was incorrect in that assessment.
Yeah, and I think that's another thing, too, like, what even, you know, me, I was right in this instance, but wrong on plenty of others. And it's important to emphasize what the team tells you, what the games have told you. And all year Boyd had played in the slot. They said even in training camp, he's our slot receiver no matter what. And I think so that's more important than, you know, what you think. And again, I'm not calling you out on that.
Oh, you are.
I've done the same thing.
Oh, you are.
Plenty of times. Like, that's fine. All the clues say that, but I believe this. And a lot of times it's important to follow what really
matters.
And they
said he's our slot wide receiver no matter what. They did not expect A.J. Green to go down. So that was one thing where we did not know. The tea leaves, as we said, were more predictive in the fashion that it would be LaFell. But we didn't know. It's a massive loss. We've said on this podcast before, you never replace a player of A.J. Green's caliber one-to-one.
But I couldn't get the image of the Brandon LaFell on the trash can out of my head.
Brandon LaFell trash can jerseys.
I couldn't do it.
Understandable. It's a hard image to get out of there.
Yeah, that is very true. But again, that's like Gelhard said at the top of the podcast, like, you know, so the intersection of talent and opportunity. Sometimes opportunity trumps talent. Like, I'm not caping up for Brandon LaFell because I think he's good. he just was going to step in a more high-value role.
Man, it was something you, so and especially funny with Bengals players, Brandon LaFell, Jeremy Hill, I mean, just riding for these dudes with opportunity.
They've presented that this
AJ
year.
AJ Green, I mean.
well, that's you know, Jeremy Hill's one of those, to just dive back real quick in my, like, talent versus opportunity thing, because, like, Jeremy Hill was playing very, very poorly, but he was getting the volume, and at least he was getting it near the goal line, so that did win out sometimes.
And I'm sure,
and in other games, you know, he had his 19 carries for 19 yards.
I'm sure after week 17, Marvin Lewis is like, why didn't we just play Rex Goathead this whole time?
Hey.
He did have a good game week 17. You're right. You're 100% right. All right,
he's a free agent this year, too.
Yeah, he is.
He's going to be, you know.
Burkhead is?
Yeah.
Or Jeremy Hill?
Burkhead.
No, Burkhead.
Why are we talking about Burkhead?
Yo, dude, Burkhead's going to
be legit. Get excited.
Actually think, you know, I mean, it's weird.
Not
MJ
getting excited.
And I had this whole debate, but I think he's an interesting player. He could make it for a decent signing somewhere.
We'll see.
Glad you've opened your eyes to the greatness of Rex Goathead.
The question was, again, this is the same thing. It's not questioning Rex Burkhead. It's just questioning opportunity.
Nope. You hated him. All right, let's move on.
I hate you.
Franchise Chris Ivory.
What?
Chris Ivory.
What?
What was your prediction on Chris Ivory?
I said he would get 6 rushing touchdowns this year with the Jaguars because coming into the season,
yeah,
it was Chris Ivory's going to be the red zone guy, and yep, T.J. Yeldon is going to be a 50-50 split, and T.J. Yeldon isn't that good, and everyone knew that. Ivory had a huge year last year with the Jets.
It's true.
I think how it all happened was, like, you kept writing up Chris Ivory, and I was like, bro, why do you keep talking about
Chris Ivory? I did. He was, like, on my must-own list.
You kept writing him up, and I was like, bro, why do you keep talking about Chris Ivory? You're like, well, he's going to be a good goal line back. And I was like, he's actually not a good red zone back. And you're like, what are you talking about? And I was like, I bet you doesn't score 6 touchdowns this year.
Yeah, so we wrote that on a sticky note, and it stayed on my cube all season. And every time, few and far between times that Chris Ivory actually scored, he only had 3 touchdowns.
He had 3 touchdowns.
I was like, oh, he got one.
To be fair, one of the reasons that I thought this would not happen would be that the Jags had to be a great passing game because that's where all their great personnel was, and they, even though they wanted to be a run team, and that really wasn't true either. So.
That didn't work.
The Jags were just
right and wrong.
So no one thought they were going to be as bad as they were.
They ran way fewer plays in the red zone too. I was just looking at it this year. They had like 140 some plays in the red zone this year. They had like, or last year, excuse, 2 years ago, and they had like 90 this year.
So Chris Ivory played in 11 games. He was hurt, I think, in another one as well. So,
yes.
It's all part of the experience.
It is all part of the Chris Ivory experience.
He only had 13 fewer rush attempts than T.J. Yeldon the whole season.
Well, T.J. Yeldon's not good.
Which is crazy.
That's one Marcus is right on.
Yeah, I don't understand that one. 117. He had 117 carries for 439 yards. That is bad.
Yeah. So well, if the entire offense hadn't face planted Franchise, you would have had a better shot at it.
Yeah, 100%.
And they only ran the ball 31 times in the red zone this year, but they ran it 52 times 2 years ago.
But here's the other thing, though, is that his career high is only 7 touchdowns. So 6 touchdowns actually was a relatively aggressive rush total. But whatever,
you're aggressive.
This is also like I understood his logic because it was coming off a year where the Jags too, they ran 52 times. They sucked running in the red zone though.
Yeah, they were terrible.
Toby Gerhardt, Denard Robinson had 13 red zone rush attempts.
What
in 2015?
Yeah, for whatever reason, T.J. Yeldon just can't get it done at the goal line.
He's not built that way, you know.
I mean, there are smaller backs that are able to burrow in.
That
or
small. He's like tall. He's tall.
Yeah, he's tall.
He just runs upright. I mean, that's the major problem is that he runs very vertical, but
and then falls over.
And then okay.
All right, MG. Yeah.
Point being, you two jabrons owe me beers.
I do.
I was wrong.
Are we gonna do that after the podcast? Is that what we're doing?
Let's do it now.
Let's do it now.
Chris Ivory sucks.
All right. Okay. All right. So there you go.
So
that puts it
settle down. This
a bow tie. That puts a wraps up a lot of the things we've been following all season long. And you know what? That's the fun part about fantasy too. By the way, how fired up were you when Brandon LaFell caught that long touchdown?
I was.
It's so stupid.
I told you I was with my.
But it's great. So awesome about fantasy.
I was with my dad. Like it was Christmas Eve. Yeah. Like I had just gotten home from working that day, and like that game was on, and I was like, "No, Brandon LaFell!" Like I he's like, "What is wrong with you?"
Yeah.
I was like, if I explain to you and explain that this is a work thing, you're going to realize how ridiculous
stupid it is.
I love this stuff, though.
It's so much fun.
I love this stuff, and that's what makes fantasy fun.
Tilting.
Anyways, all right.
You know what else makes fantasy fun?
What? The podcast?
Bad singing.
Oh, bad singing. Okay.
How did you discover this? And walk us through this mashup that we're going to.
Oh, my God. First of all, you guys have no idea. I've got like, you know, I've got like 40 podcasts on my computer right now, okay? And I was trying to go through almost all of them, trying to find themes in the podcast.
Grinding the tape.
Grinding tape on the podcast. the Fiery Phoner obviously was the easiest one because that was every Friday.
You're welcome.
You knew it was coming. And there were already so many great moments in the Phoner. I was like, okay, obviously that's going to be the first one. And then I tried to find some other themes. There are some. Listen, guys, listen to the podcast.
Guys.
I'm telling you, we've got. I'm going to have a best of the podcast. Period. It's like it's going to be like the fantasy MVP award. But there are some amazing segments. But I needed to find some smaller things in the podcast themes that we could share as well. I start going through and I'm like, wait a second, I have a ridiculous amount of singing clips, and they're all terrible.
Ugh.
And they are all terrible. So now we will be voting for best of the worst singing of the NFL Fantasy Live podcast.
All right.
Here we go.
Best.
Horrible.
Singing.
NFL. November
4. It's gonna be fun.
That was that the NSYNC?
I didn't mean for it to sound that way, but I think like
it's gonna
just,
be me.
Yeah.
It's gonna be me. It just kind of came out that way though.
Wow.
So whatever.
All that I do.
Oh God. All right.
Got enough for you. Jeez. But nobody else.
Gelhar's music. This is a summary of Gelhar's music takes. Boy band pop music, Hoobastank, and the most garbage hard rock metal possible.
Hey, look,
dude,
I felt wrong.
Everything.
I just summed up everything.
November 7.
Nickelback did with the
that
hero.
A hero can save us.
Oh, yeah.
Hero. I'm not gonna stand here.
Oh God! End the show right now.
Yeah, let's
end the show.
So I quote tweeted Marcus's picture with that lyric.
November 21.
How do you make that voice come out of you?
I'm very talented. There seems to be an issue. My mic went off for a second. I'm sure that was an accident.
Oh, yeah. It's a complete accident.
My God.
What? I feel like most of those...
Why are these all... They're all Harmon, right?
No, it's two Harmon and two... Well, two Harmon and two me, and because we joined in on
yeah.
the 5-5 one together.
Yeah.
Wow.
No. Gelhar. So these are your three nominees.
I think I just died.
I forgot that I chimed in on the NSYNC one because I was like, oh, I remember when Harmon did this, and I was like, oh no, I did falsetto.
These are your three.
Oh no.
Gelhar NSYNC is one nominee. Harmon Gelhar mashup Nickelback is your other nominee. Harmon with Wonderwall is your final nominee.
Not forget it was Harmon Gelhar Nickelback featuring Josie Scott from Saliva.
Wow. Oh, man, that was deep.
That's what it was. Those Spider-Man 1 soundtrack.
That addition there. I mean, like I was leaning that way, but that addition there, I mean, I feel like it's, you know, it was
the
Spider-Man.
A bad song by Spider-Man? A questionable band sung poorly. I feel like that's the winner.
Here's the thing.
Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Spider-Man.
These are the three bands that were nominated, okay? NSYNC, Nickelback,
featuring Josie Scott from Saliva.
Sheesh.
And Wonderwall.
All irrelevant.
Oasis. Oh, sorry. Oasis.
Oasis is good.
All irrelevant unless you're a 40-year-old dad.
God.
Oh, Oasis is not 40-year-old dad music.
It kind of is.
What is it, then? What is it, then?
It kind of is.
Like like 40-year-old.
No,
life has passed him by. He's alone at a bar somewhere.
No, it's 40-year-old dad music that you pop on in front of your kids to be like, "See, guys,
I'm into your stuff.
I'm not a total dweeb. See, I listen to this.
Back in my day, I listened to this on cassette."
All right, who's gonna start the voting?
I mean, isn't it easy?
I feel like it's got to be the Nickelback.
It's got to be the Nickelback.
It's got to be Nickelback.
Can I?
I don't know.
I would vote for Nickelback just because it had me laughing, but. The best part of that mashup to me was Harmon describing Gelhar's musical taste.
That's why I was going to go with NSYNC.
I was crying just now.
That was just me reporting facts.
Yeah.
Those are not facts.
I don't
Those
know. It's close.
Facts. I was going to vote NSYNC. That's my vote.
I like my vote's the hero one, the Spider-Man one.
Spider-Man.
All right, so
I feel like, so terrible.
I think Nickelback is the winner here.
I think Nickelback's the runaway winner.
Gelhar, is that your choice?
I was a toss up between NSYNC because my own falsetto caught me by surprise listening to it.
It was good.
And then
I said, the breakdown of your musical taste was also quite strong.
But I think it's hard to get away from
the organic
duet because it features two trash artists and two trash singers.
And that was speak for yourself. One,
no.
Two,
I've got video evidence of otherwise.
Well, that when I'm singing on those voices, that doesn't count. Man. I mean, I have a
no. We went to karaoke night, pal.
Yeah, we all have video evidence of that.
We've got visual evidence.
Now that that ever makes it out to the public, my God. for multiple reasons.
Yeah, man. The listeners, y'all don't know.
All right. I think Nickelback's the runaway winner.
Right. I mean, it was a show ender. It was a show stopper.
Okay,
yeah.
It's a show stopper.
We were already at a really bad point in the podcast when that started.
Much like I feel like we're at now.
Yeah.
So your inaugural best of worst singing for the NFL Fantasy Live podcast. Congratulations, Matt Harmon and Alex Gilhar, for your rendition of as they give each other an air high five of Nickelback.
Hey,
solid.
Wow, we're an achievement.
We're a great team.
When it comes to singing trash music.
Oh, boy. All right. So there you go. Let's get to Daily Daps and get out.
Extra, extra. Read all about it.
This is the Daily
Daps and Hook. Give me daps because I'll be scribbling rap.
Give me dapping up daps about daps.
For a show that we don't have anything to talk about.
It's run pretty well.
We talked
still
a lot.
Down.
Yeah. I was going to point that out as well.
That is amazing. That is amazing. All right. Daily Dap time. Give it to me, Matt Harmon.
So I think my daily dap is going to be a little bit more sports related. I want to give a dap to Eli Manning, which sounds weird in this midst of this horrible season that he's having.
What?
But I'm going to give a dap to Eli Manning for his ability to be actually somewhat funny in slapping down the non-story story of Odell and the boys on the boat. I love the fact that he just bit back with, you know, I was disappointed to see that they really didn't they weren't preparing well. I mean, they didn't even pack shirts for the trip. I thought that was really good.
Nice.
I think that was funny.
Nicely done.
I think that was nicely done. Just because I think this entire story is ridiculous. We were talking about this at lunch today. How it's great how the media is like this, and I say this as media. I realize that I'm doing that thing that I hate, but like it's just funny that so many people are like. The team has said this is not a story. It's not a big deal. Coach has said that. Quarterback has said that. But then people in some outlets are still like, yeah, but we're still going to talk about it. They're not telling the truth. Like, it's definitely still a story. But like the team has said it's not a story, and I think Eli has done a really good job of being funny about that.
Oh boy.
So he gets my dap.
MG, my guy, Marcus Grant.
I want a daily dap. I want a daily dap. The Rose Bowl, like the game itself.
Okay.
I mean, not obviously, you know, being there on Monday was a lot of fun and it was great. But just it reminded me how amazing it is as a sporting event in and of itself. And just it's one of those things that it should be on your sports bucket list to do at some point. And I say that because I was sort of like so about actually going to the game. Anyone who lives in Los Angeles knows how much of a hassle it is to get to the Rose Bowl Stadium.
It's awful.
It's you understand getting through Pasadena, which is just this kind of this sleepy little town, this little city, and it's in a canyon in a residential neighborhood adjacent to a golf course where you have to park if you're not there like super early or have special parking. I mean, everything about it just seems like a nightmare. I felt kind of like I don't really know if I want to go, but my dad is coming to town and he really wants to go, so let's figure it out. And being there on New Year's Day or around New Year's Day for that game and seeing just all the pageantry that goes in there and even just being in that stadium where it is, you know, half one team's color and half the other team's color and just the excitement and everything that goes into it. It just reminded me that it's a really, really special thing to do. And if you are a sports fan of any stripe, that it is something that you should acquire to do.
That's cool.
You should aspire to be there. And so, congrats to them for putting on another great show. The game, especially if you were even just a neutral party, was just amazing to watch. Daily dabs to the folks in Pasadena for year in and year out for the 103rd year. Putting on a really great show. And maybe one day the Cal Bears can experience.
Oh, wow. Where did...
Yikes.
Unprovoked attack, man.
Speaking of your boys, USC, breaking news here on the podcast. USC's quarterback Sam Darnold has won the Archie Griffin Award.
Hey.
College football's most valuable player for the entire season. First freshman to ever win it.
That's
congratulations,
amazing.
Sam Darnold.
I was happy for the conference. And here comes Marcus Grant. Just putting a blowtorch. What's up with that?
Roasted.
You'll get us back in basketball season.
Oh, my God. That was just uncalled for. All right, WizKid, what's up?
I'm going to adapt the movie Lion. It's not out super wide, but if you live in a major city, you'll probably be able to check it out. It's starring Dev Patel, who's in Slumdog Millionaire. Nicole Kidman's in it. Rooney Mara's in it. It was a surprisingly really good story, and I didn't realize at first that it was based on a true story. It's based on the book and of this guy who, as a child, I think he was living in India, accidentally got on a passenger train that took him thousands away, miles away from his house. He was 5 years old, couldn't get off, didn't speak, it dropped him in Calcutta, didn't speak the English. survived a bunch of hardships, was in like a foster home, and was adopted by an Australian family. And then 25 years later realizes, like, I need to try and go back and find my birth mother and my family and stuff. So it's his journey through all that as a child, and you get him as an adult, and he's played by Dev Patel, and then his journey trying to find his home. Because he, I mean, he was five when he was on a train that traveled for two or three days. So he has this wide range of train stops in India he's trying to narrow down and find his family from. And it's a true story. It was really well done. It's really cool. And it's a smaller movie that's not getting as much attention. It's been nominated for a bunch of awards, so hopefully it picks up some steam. But
wasn't there an ad for Google or something that had to do with that story?
Probably. Well, because he used Google Earth, like the actual person did. Google Earth had popped up shortly after this time because he was talking about it with people, and they were like, you should try and use Google Earth. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And he used Google Earth to help find it.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's cool. I haven't read the book. That's kind of what's helped partially portrayed in the movies, him using Google Earth. So.
All right, cool.
But it's a really good movie. It's a good heartwarming tale is we need some of those once in a while.
It's pretty cool.
I will daily dap the GOP congressman's son, Roger Marshall's son. Did you guys see this?
Yes.
Yeah, Roger Marshall was getting sworn in at the nation's capital. It was Roger Marshall, who is a GOP congressman. It was House Speaker Paul Ryan swearing in Roger Marshall. Roger Marshall's son was there holding the Bible, and he then, during the photo op, proceeded to start dabbing.
How old
repeatedly.
Is his son?
Repeatedly.
Oh, he's a teenager.
He's a teenager, like 15 or 16 or something. But like, it was so, the thing was so, he had one hand on the Bible, and the other hand was, he was dabbing. And Paul Ryan was so confused. Paul Ryan asked him if he was all right and was wondering if he was – he was asking him, are you about to sneeze?
That's amazing.
He didn't understand what was happening, but then they start doing the whole photo op, and his arm still does not go down.
Didn't Paul Ryan try to, like, force
basically
him to
just push
it down?
So then, pushed his arm down.
So then Paul Ryan then physically pushed his arm down.
Do you think Paul Ryan didn't know what he was doing?
I think he didn't know.
I don't think he knew.
See, I would present a different possibility.
Yes.
In that he knew what the kid was doing and was trying to subtly say, like, are you trying to sneeze right now? Like, are you really doing that in this moment? I think that's a potential.
I don't know. I've looked at the video, and, like, the look on Paul Ryan's face, he didn't look upset at first. He just was confused, like, utterly, utterly confused.
I only heard the audio of it. I didn't see the video.
So it was amazing.
That's great.
It was amazing. It's all over the Twitters, so go find that. But daily daps to Roger Marshall's kid for taking that opportunity.
That's awesome.
Dabbing, which is just like, come on, dude.
Dabbing lives.
I know. It's great. I mean, talk about the most random place ever to go see a dab is at a GOP congressman swearing-in ceremony.
Pretty great.
What? That's so awesome.
That's awesome.
That's great. All right, Franch, what you got?
All right, I'm going to daily daps this show I've been watching on A&E. It's a documentary about Scientology produced by Leah Remini, who's an actress. She was
a former
Scientologist herself for at least 20 years, I think.
Yeah.
So it's basically like a mini series, and each episode, basically she's meeting with people who either were high up in the church of Scientology or had been in the church of Scientology for 20, 30 years and have left.
Yes.
And all of their individual stories of tragic loss and sadness and just being disconnected from family members and trying to reunite, and how the Church of Scientology holds people back from having personal relationships. And it's crazy. It's emotional. It's so eye-opening and enlightening as to the sham that the Church of Scientology is. And it just brainwashes people. And there was this documentary a few years ago on HBO, I think it was called Going Clear, that basically, it was like 2.5 hours, that was basically like, this is who L. Ron Hubbard is, like his life, the guy who started Scientology.
Right.
It kind of brings you through what Scientology is about. And this is very different, where it's like these people's personal stories, and they're crying on camera, and like just wearing their heart on their sleeves about what they've gone through and how crazy it is. And
I can imagine.
It's ridiculous.
I haven't seen it, but I can imagine it's got to be a pretty good one.
Yeah,
Liam Remini has talked about openly about how emotional of a journey it's been for her to kind of leave the Church of Scientology.
For sure. And once you leave, like, they come after you.
Right.
They
right,
spy
right.
on you, and they try to make your life hell. And living in Hollywood, like, they own a bunch of buildings.
A lot of very large buildings.
On my way to the gym, I walk past, like, the L. Ron Hubbard Theater every day, and it's, like, really surreal just like seeing the propaganda and stuff.
I wonder if we have any Scientologist listeners.
That's interesting. I don't know.
They're not allowed to like listen to
podcasts?
Media. Outside media. No, it's like a thing. Like
all right.
They scare you into not reading press that's negative about Scientology.
That's interesting.
When you're in there.
Mm. Okay. Well.
And if they do and are listening, come at me, bro.
Sorry.
Oh boy.
Well, you can come at him.
The franchise is about to get disappeared.
So. It's just really good. You guys should watch it. It's awesome. It's on A&E. It's called Scientology and the Aftermath.
That's interesting.
Sick.
That's interesting stuff. All right, so there you go. Big good show today.
Good
Random.
Show.
Beefy.
Out of nowhere. I like it. For MG My Guy, Marcus Grant, Matt Harmon, Matt Franciscovich, and Alan Skelhar, I'm James Coe. We're out.
See you later.
James needs that Clip Nation money. He's used his life's getting cushy over there now with that. Walking in with cupcakes and shit.
Cupcakes and his fancy clothes.
Button-up shirt.
Yeah, his shirt's tucked in, too.
Wearing a watch.
What's happening today?
Yeah, look at that. How much did that watch cost? Like $500?
What? This one?
I'm going to go with $500.
Yeah, it probably was $500. Actually, I think you're right, actually. I think I bought it on sale for $500. Yeah.
Yowza.
Wow.
Wow, so I guess Clip Nation pays well, huh?
I got this one the last offseason.
Not sure about that. Right. Can't prove it.
Not quite my narrative.
Let's see the receipt, bro.
Okay. All right. Okay.
I'm just saying, making all this basketball money us football people are just withering away.
Withering away.
I don't know where my next meal is coming from. My first day off, I'm going to be in the streets of Hollywood scrounging change from the sidewalk.
Wow. You're not living.
Maybe the burrito truck will have some droppings.
I mean, you're not even living paycheck to paycheck. You're living day to day.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
You wouldn't know anything about that.
Saving for a wedding.
By far the least of the common man here.
Wow, that escalated quickly. I apologize, James.
Where'd you get your haircut, too? Who styled it for you?
Who styled it? I actually got my haircut. This is the rich getting richer. I get free haircuts.
Wow.
From Talent Services in the makeup room.
Talent cool. Services.
Yeah. Serviced.
Talent.
You get serviced.
That looks like 100%. Some expensive product in your hair, too.
Yeah, probably.
It's crude.
James, isn't it amazing?
So, that's like $20
a can. Pile on. Oh, they do this to me all the time at our desks. One of them gets a nibble.
This shtick is well practiced.
And then they trade back and forth as they feast on your flesh.
Yes.